Hi everyone, this is Diva from Blood Hunter and you're listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast, where we dive into the albums, bands, and that made metal what it is today. I'm your host, Blake. And together we'll explore the sounds, the legends, and the anthems that keep the metal flame burning. Anthems, I meant to say, sorry. Visit our website, The Metal Pit, at www.themetalpit.org, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit. And you can check out our podcast website, which is www.themetalpitpodcast.com. And you can also follow that on Facebook and Instagram, which is at The Metal Pit Podcast. And you can find us on YouTube at The Metal Pit 666 for audio versions of this podcast. If you want to send me an email, like questions or comments about the episodes, or maybe you want to be a guest on an episode or something, you can email me podcast@themetalpit.org. And I have two guests today. One is a regular returning guest, Eric from Virginia. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing most excellent, Blake. How about yourself?
Just fine. And our other guest is not a member of the Metal Pit, but he is a fan of the Metal Pit podcast. And he did what I just said a minute ago. He emailed me and said he'd like to be a guest. And here he is from North Carolina. James, how you doing, James?
Hey, Blake. Doing great, man. Good to be able to join you and Eric for this episode. Longtime fan, been binging episodes, so it's kind of surreal to be here. But I'm excited for it. Ready to talk some Overkill.
Okay. And thanks for the email and joining us here, because it's nice to – I think you're the first fan, aren't you, I think, if I remember.
That sounds right.
I think it's the first person. I have another guy from Australia that wants to be on one. And we're going to do an AC/DC album, because I told him I wanted to do an AC/DC one with an Australian guy.
So that's only fitting.
Excellent choice, yeah.
Okay, so, and as James mentioned, we're going to do Overkill today. And this is our second Overkill episode. The first one was their first full-length album, I believe, was the one I did with a member of a band. And I can't remember all these names. I didn't write them down, so I'm not going to. But look it up. Methane. Actually, that's a group. The group was called Methane. And it's a singer, I think, and bass player from Methane, a thrash group. And he wanted to do the first full-length Overkill album. But anyway, we're going to do the fourth album, which is The Years of Decay from 1989. Now, before we get to that, though, I did want to ask James, I guess I should have did this first, but James, since I always ask this to guests on the show, how did you get into heavy metal music?
Yeah, great question. So my origin story for metal is probably going to be a little bit different than what you've heard from a lot of guests on here. So I was born in 1990, for context. So I was not around for sort of the heyday for a lot of those classic metal bands, Priest, Maiden, Saxon, Motorhead. You know, they were kind of in their young years before my time. So it actually all started in the year 2000. So I had just turned 10 years old and had a really, really awful day at school for some reason. Now, looking back now, probably as a 10-year-old, it was something incredibly insignificant to life in general. But whatever it was, it set me off for whatever that looks like for a 10-year-old. So I came home, popped the CD in my boombox. So I'm at least old enough to have CDs in a boombox. It's a little bit different than the streaming now. But I had an album by a band called Living Sacrifice. So they're a metal band. I think they typically have Christian lyrics, but they seem to be pretty beloved by a lot of folks. And so their debut in 1989 was more of a thrashy type of very Slayer-esque sound. As I got into the early to mid 90s, they went kind of swung more into a death metal direction. And then late 90s into the 2000s, it was almost like a hardcore metalcore type of sound. So they've been a little bit all over the map. But it was an album called The Hammering Process that came out in 2000. Bought it from a local bookstore. got it home and hated it at first because he was doing these guttural vocals. And at that point in my life, I had no idea that music existed with that kind of vocal style. And so it kind of threw me for a loop for a little bit. So put it away for a few months and then fast forward to this difficult day at school, which was likely insignificant. Threw it in the boombox and thought, man, this stuff is killer. I just, maybe it was the mood I was in. That was kind of when they were in their metalcore phase, but the guttural vocals were there, the shredding was there, and I headbanged in my room until my neck was sore, felt like my head was going to fall off, and that was kind of that first experience, and it branched out from there, and I kind of worked my way back to some of the classic bands, so maybe a little bit of a story of working in reverse.
Yeah, that's cool. Do you have a favorite genre, you think, or do you like all kinds of metal?
Yeah, I mean, I love pretty much every subgenre. The only one I'm not as into is black metal, but I don't have anything against it. It's just not really my cup of tea. But I would say probably groove metal. That was kind of the purveyors were Pantera. That's my favorite band of all time. But thrash would be a close second. And I know thrash and groove have a fair bit of overlap. You could sometimes call groove mid-paced thrash. So those are really my top two. And then traditional heavy metal and probably stripped down rock and roll would follow kind of right behind that. So.
Okay. And like we say, we're going to talk Overkill tonight. They have, well, first, for anybody who doesn't know, formed in 1980 in New Jersey. Overkill is one of the pioneering bands of the American thrash metal scene. I guess this is going to be, they weren't in the big four, right? I guess they'd be the next big four. I think we talked about this sometime in some other episode.
We did. Yeah. They should have been, but
yeah. So like they could even have been in there maybe instead of somebody else, but anyway, let's see. Known for their aggressive sound, of course, rapid fire riffs, and of course this unmistakable snarl of Bobby Blitz Ellsworth, especially in the older albums, I find, or even, I don't know, he's still doing it today. Like they have 20
somehow
they have 20 studio albums plus an EP that I guess they count as also a studio. I mean, it was a studio album, but I mean, they have 20 full length studio albums plus one covers album. Or is that part? I forget.
There's a covers album.
Is that counting as the 20? I forget now. I counted today, but I think they have 20 besides that one.
Correct. That sounds right.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're talking about the Years of Decay, which is their fourth one. And before I get into that album, I'll ask Eric, since you haven't been on it. Well, we've only did one, Overkill, like I said. When did you first hear Overkill or this album, maybe?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that question this morning over my cup of coffee, and I was already listening to an Overkill mix I put together. I want to say it was In Union We Stand. Going back to actual music videos when MTV actually played videos, and I was watching this and I was like, whoa, man, this is pretty intense stuff. I didn't like the riffs were really like the rhythm guitars flying, absolutely just moving, but it has a halftime feel, as you know. And then Bobby Blitzer hits you with these higher notes. And I was like, that was unexpected, but I was like, man, it works. It sounds awesome. I need to buy their album, you know? And that was, I don't know. I was, I guess, like shortly after that album came out. So,
was that the first album?
Mid-80s. No, it's Field of Fire is the first one. It's their second album. Okay. Yep. James held up the two. He knows. Yep. You got it. Number two. No, that was cool.
Okay. James, when did you first hear, like, since you're going back, since me and Eric are older, what about you? When did you discover Overkill, or what album or whatever did you first hear of Overkill?
Yeah, so Overkill came along a little bit later for me. I was just getting ready to turn 22, so it would have been in 2012, which is the same year they released The Electric Age. And so I was in college at the time. I was in my final semester of undergrad, just a few months away from graduating. And man, when I put The Electric Age on and Come and Get It, and then Electric Rattlesnake, the first two songs on that started playing, I was just like, oh my goodness, I've been missing out so badly on these guys. You know, I knew I had Metallica, I had Megadeth and all those guys, but Overkill, for some reason, maybe it's because they're not in the big four. I don't know how they slipped off my radar, but man, when I discovered them on that album, that it was game over for me. So yeah, going back about 13 years now.
Now for me, it's hard to, now I probably said this on the other episode, but it's hard to remember, but I think I first saw a video also, but I think it was Hello from the Gutter from their third album, I think.
Mm-hmm. Under the Influence.
Mm-hmm. Is when I first really heard them, or at least that I remember hearing them or seeing them, whatever. But I know that as soon as I heard that, I liked that. It's why I went out. I didn't check my vinyl here to see what I have, but I'm pretty sure I have that one on vinyl. And I pretty much have listened to everything they've done, I think. I'm not sure if I've listened to that first EP, the EP that I won't mention the title. No, fuck you. Title, I guess.
Middle fingers up.
I don't know if I ever bought that or seen that or whatever. I know I've seen it. The cover, of course, like you just said, the finger up there. But anyway. But anyway, yeah. So I think it was the third album that I heard. But anyway, what else did I want to say? So yeah, they had their debut, or their first album was Feel the Fire. That's the other podcast episode we did. And then Taking Over was the second album that Eric mentioned. And then we had Under the Influence, 88, Years of Decay, 89. Oh, wait, sorry. Taking Over was 87. And then a year later, Under the Influence, 88. Year later, Years of Decay, 89. And then they took a year off, and Horoscope was 1991.
Coma.
And so they have 20, and their last studio album was called Scorched. Maybe I'll ask about that before we get into this album. Did you both listen to Scorched? Do you like Scorched, the album? Did you give much listen to it yet or whatever?
You can go ahead, James.
Yeah, so it came out in April of 2023. And man, a 4-year break, as we were talking about before we started, the longest break between albums, although COVID was in between there. So yeah, likely had a lot to do with it. But I got it the day it came out, and I have played it numerous times through. And I'm just amazed at how these guys, at the stage of their career that they're at now, to be able to jam the way they do. I mean, it really is amazing. Blitz sounds as vital as he ever has. The title track kicks it off with this kind of melodic intro, and man, it doesn't take long to get into Full Throttle. The Surgeon, Twist of the Wick, Harder They Fall. I mean, there are hits all over the album. I think it's tremendous. I don't know how you felt about it, Eric.
Sadly, I haven't listened to it enough. Like, I spun it. But then it was one of those things where I had a playlist of, I kid you not, like 12 other albums. So I'm like, crap, man, when am I going to kind of squeeze it in? And I'm already kind of going back on some other albums that, like, I've listened to, but I'm like, these guys just churn out so much. And I like other, like, thrash speed metal. I'm a big classic metal guy, and I'm a big progressive metal guy. Dream Theater, big time. Maiden, huge. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I haven't listened to it enough, but I like, my first impression, I was like, this is pretty badass. I like it. And the one that Blake, I just had it. Yeah. And you brought it up earlier, James, but the Wings of Wars, like that one really, as far as their last, I guess, maybe a few albums, like that's one that stayed with me quite a bit. Really like that a lot, but the new album's good. I just need to give it some more spins. I got to make time for it, you know?
I guess I should have asked this question before we did our top 10 list, but whatever. I threw it out there now. But I didn't really give it much of a listen either, but I was going through stuff. I wasn't really liking anything I heard. But I know when we did our top albums of 2023, it made the list from other writers that liked the album. So I can't remember what number it was at, but I think it was in the top 5, I believe it was. So people liked it, and it's the thing about Overkill, they're kind of like the AC/DC of thrash metal. They don't change too much. Like, it's pretty much, I mean, they don't sound exactly the same album to album, but you know, they've never strayed from their thrash and stuff. And like, you know, they came out about the same time Testament, right? But Testament did change. They went more death metal. But now they've come back again, and I think they have a new album coming out this year. I hope. I think so.
Yeah. Well, and Electric Crown was like kind of commercial sounding, like when Metallica sold out. Yeah. Electric Crown, like there's some phenomenal lead guitar playing, but yeah, it's definitely more kind of more mainstream, but you're right. Then they, you know, they went into The Gathering and, you know, more the death route. And yeah. Overkill's one of those bands. Like, it's funny. I was looking real quick. I was just kind of looking over Wiki, and it's true. Like, Bobby Blitzer is like, we're comfortable in our own area. Like, you know, but we're confident, comfortable in our own area. And I was like, you know what they like, if you think about all the other metal, you can go into different subgenres, but they keep it interesting. But you know who they are. Like, the first 5 to 10 seconds of any song by them, oh, that's Overkill. You know, I listened to like Playing with Spiders, Skull Crusher earlier. I mean, what a killer song. But I'm listening to that and I'm like, and I don't want to devote too much time to it, but I was like, it's Overkill. Like, right away, 5 seconds, 3 to 5 seconds, it's Overkill. Like, I had it on shuffle and I was like, yep, Overkill. Years of Decay. Yep.
Okay, so we're going to get to the album now. I just want the lineup here is, of course, lead vocals, Bobby Blitz Ellsworth, D.D. Verney on bass, Bobby Gustafson on guitars, and Sid Felk on drums. I don't think I ever knew the drummer's name until I researched for this. I don't know why. But this was the last album to feature Bobby Gustafson, because I had this somewhere. Because he had a falling out or something, I think, with the rest of the band. So he either quit or got fired, but I don't have the full details there. But anyway, we're not going to worry about that. We're going to get into the album, and it starts off with Time to Kill. And I'm going to let Eric go first on Time to Kill.
Well, I'll tell you what. I had it on, listening on the headphones, and I'm like, okay, do I have the volume up loud enough? And it's just building and building up. And it's been, you know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years since I've listened to this album. And I don't want to give it away, any spoilers, but it came up and bam, I'm like, oh, I just love the accents. It eventually kicks in. You know, you got Bobby, you got the Blitz hitting that scream, and they go into that wicked like triplet riff. And then they go into that straight up like thrash down picking with the verse. And I mean, the chorus is simplistic, but man, it just hits you over the head. And honestly, I want to say, and I love the vocals, but those stops that they throw in there are just so damn aggressive. I'm like, my God, you know, for like, you know, mid to late 80s, like, that's some really heavy punctuated stuff. And it's compressed. It's really tight. And the production is like, yeah, I probably should have waited till the end of the album to mention production, but you can hear everything crisply. I mean, everything sounds really good. But it's, you know, I would probably say it's hard thinking about all 20 albums, but it's one of my favorites. I do love Shred very much. Shred might be on par, but it's one of my favorite opening tracks out of any of Overkill's albums, all of their albums. And what do you guys think? Yeah,
James, what do you think of this song to start the album?
Yeah, it's a great way to kick off the album. So we get a 6-plus minute track to get us started. And just to echo what Eric said, I mean, that buildup, it's kind of this slow sort of chugging intro to the song. But when Blitz lets out that scream, like you mentioned, Eric, I mean, the album is off and running. I mean, and then we do get a little bit of a nice kind of slower breakdown sort of in the middle of the song, where it does slow the pace a little bit, almost becomes a little bit of a gallop, it sounds like. I know we tend to associate the gallop with Iron Maiden, but it does.
Not the irons.
Yeah, there you go. It slows down to a little bit of a gallop, but it's still just the verses and the chorus are just very thrashy. Blitz sounds amazing. I mean, you get a really good feel for what you're in for with this opening track. I love it.
Yeah, and I did listen. I think this is probably the Overkill album I listened to the most, probably because of, like, what year is this album again? Sorry.
89, right?
Because it's probably when I was the most into everything in the 80s there. And I didn't look up like what other albums came out in 1989 there. Because, and Eric, I know you messed me and I met text message about if we ever did top 10 of 1989, and I forgot to go look it up. But anyway, yeah. I was just wondering, but I know I listened to this album the most. And Time to Kill, well, I'm not going to say, I was going to say something, but I'm going to save that for later. I have something to mention later, but I'll just save it for that. So the second track is also a video I think I remember seeing for sure, and that's for the track Elimination. Sorry, I can't do it like But James, what did you think of Elimination?
Yeah, tremendous track. And I'm with you, Blake. I'm not going to try to spit it out the way Blitz does. I might throw my voice out. But Elimination is a fantastic song. And I do have to mention just really quickly, because I've heard a criticism of the main riff in this song, with people calling it a bit of a ripoff of the title track from Metallica's Master of Puppets. And I mean, is there some similarity? Sure, I can hear some, I think. But we have to remember, too, we're talking about 89. I mean, thrash had been on the rise for several years. Tons of bands were coming out playing in this style. And so, I mean, it stands to reason that at some point somebody's going to make a song that sounds somewhat similar to somebody else. But it is not a Master of Puppets ripoff. I love that album. You know, I'm not dumping on Metallica. It's a masterpiece of an album. But this is not a Master of Puppets ripoff to my ears anyway. I just think it's got a crushing tempo throughout the song, and it is an absolute staple in the live set. They play that song. You know, we're still here. We're sitting here now just a little over 35 years after the album came out, and still very much a live set. And Blitz kind of goes after everybody in the lyrics. And, you know, Blake, I'm with you. Like I've heard you say before, I'm not like huge on lyrics generally. But he's going after everybody. Eliminate the right, eliminate the wrong, eliminate the weak, eliminate the strong. I mean, he kind of goes after it all. So, you know, killer solo from Bobby G on this one as well. And having seen them live, I can say that when they play this track, it is a sight to see the crowd's reaction when they bust it out. So it's fantastic.
And Eric, what do you think?
This is just one of those no frills songs. They just come out, you know, all guns blazing, that rhythm guitar playing. I mean, the down picking is just ferocity personified. Blitzer sounds just incredible on this song. I really like, while the chorus, there aren't many lyrics in the chorus, I think it's very effective how Blitzer hits the higher notes on the Elimination. Then you have that nice, it's kind of that classic 80s thrash gang vocals that kind of come in there just briefly. It's just, they play off of one another really well. That was clever how they put that together. And then the solo section is pretty cool because it's blistering and then they slow it down. And it's like, wow, this is like pretty melodic stuff. And like, I'm sitting here like listening to it like this morning. I'm like, man, I was like, this is kind of gutsy. You know, there aren't too many speed thrash metal bands that are going to try to slow things down, add some harmony guitar parts, you know, and I can appreciate it because it's got, you know, a little bit of the new wave of British heavy metal kind of vibes there, just for a few bars. But yeah, it's such a great driving song. And it's a great tune, man. I love it. It feels like track one and two, they're gunning, man. They're just coming right out. They're not apologizing. This is who we are, you know?
I mean, his vocals are great all the time, I guess, but I love his vocals on this song. And like you mentioned, the lyrics there, James, I like the lines, forward my meal, 6 feet underground, and then last one out, close to the coffin door. I always love those lines
back. Yeah, then. It's a good one. I always like her.
But yeah, those are great. And you mentioned them playing it live and setlist.fm, which not sure how accurate it is. I mentioned this before, but I was just looking, and Elimination is the third most played live song by Overkill. Now, I wouldn't guess the first two. Would you guys be able to guess what the two most played Overkill live songs are?
is Hello from the Gutter one of them?
Yeah, I was going to say Gutter. And Union We Stand?
It's the next one. It's four, actually, but no, it's not one of the top two. The second one is a cover song.
Frankenstein.
No. It's actually off their first EP, I guess, I'm assuming, because it's called Fuck You. by the Subhumans, it says. So, whatever. And then the first one, I'm not sure what album it's from, but Rotten to the Core is the most.
Oh, the debut. Live song. To the Core. Yeah, it's all Feel the Fire. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes sense. And
good tune.
Great tune.
Definitely an anthem. You know, I mean, that is a thrash anthem, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's funny. So they've played, according to this, they've played Elimination 808 times.
Wow.
The second most highest song on this album. They've played 100 times, so they've played Elimination 700 more times than any other songs on this album.
Oh, it's quite a gap.
Anyway, yes, it is. But you know, you got 20 albums. You know, what are you going to do, right? You can only play so many songs, and you know they don't really have like Elimination. I guess would be the closest thing. Not to a hit for other people, but for a hit for a thrash metal band, like where you're
single,
that song or whatever.
Yeah.
It's whatever. But yeah, so, you know, it would be pretty, I would be safe to say if I went to see Overkill, I'd probably be disappointed that I didn't hear this song. I didn't hear this song. I didn't hear this song because they have so many albums and you can't play them all or whatever. Okay. So then we go to track three. And he hates everything, I guess. And most of all, I hate you. Well, I don't hate you, Eric, but what do you think of the song I Hate?
It's a great song. This is the one that I was going to guess if that was maybe the one that had been played maybe 100 times or so. I don't know if you still have it pulled up, but I could see them playing the song quite a few times. Cause yeah, there's definitely some piss and venom in the lyrics there. And the song's just soaked with attitude. I think it's great. They have some pretty cool like chromatic runs in there combined with some just really thick power chords. It's a cool song, man, from opener to closer, man. Like that song, you know, I think it's awesome.
I mean, and James, do you like I Hate?
Yeah, I love the hate. Yeah, this is a tremendous track. We get a shorter track here. It's the shortest one on the album. It's comes in shy of 4 minutes, but it does have a little bit of a more melodic intro to it, and Blitz seems to utilize maybe a little bit more of a cleaner vocal style for the most part. But yeah, it continues to maintain that quicker tempo, even though there's a little bit more variety in tempo, as we'll see as we get a little bit farther in the track listing. But I don't know if either of you guys picked this up, but to me, it almost, in some sections of the song, almost has a kind of punk inflection to it. And Overkill's known.
Yeah, I was going to mention that real quick. I meant to mention that the chorus definitely has a punkish, hardcore kind of vibe. I'm glad you brought that up, James. Continue.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. I just kind of, and they're known to work the punk into their sound. I mean, I know we're not talking about their 2005 album Relics here, but they have a song on there. The last track is called Old School, and it's just pretty much straight punk the whole way through. So they've been known to do that before. I just think it works really well here, and probably something I'll say another 12 times as we progress. Just another killer solo from Gustafson here.
Yes, I'm assuming that song Fuck You song, The Subhumans, I'm assuming that's probably a punk group, but I can't be sure. But with a title like that, it probably is from way back then. What was I going to say? I find, even though, yes, it does have the punkish sound, but it also sounds like it's even commercial in a way. The song where, you know, he's saying, I hate this and I hate that or whatever, where it could be a good song, like you said, to play live. It is your third highest on this album that they've played live, but they've only played it 89 times. But again, okay, like compared to Elimination, that's not very much, but whatever. And I think this song, Nothing to Die For, the next one, I mean, Nothing to Die For, they haven't played this at all ever live.
Oh, that's a shame.
So what do we think of Nothing to Die For, James?
Yeah, just another great. I mean, there are no tracks on here that I don't think are great, but yeah, this one's got another little bit of a slower intro here, but again, it really doesn't take long for the song to just kick into full gear. Blitz, I would say this time around, uses more of a snarl in his vocal. That's probably about the best way I can put it. But a really cool song, and right before the solo kicks in, there's a very brief, I'm talking just a few seconds, but it almost sounds like a sort of funk little bridge right before the solo kicks in. I thought, did someone invite a funk band into the studio or something? But it's just those little kernels that Overkill was, like we said, they've always stayed in their lane, but they also have found ways to keep the music engaging, to keep it interesting. And I think this is just even though it's just a brief few seconds, I think it's another example of that. And the drumming on this song, I want to highlight that for a second too. Sid Falk is just pounding the skins on this song. I mean, it really does just put an extra drive into the song. So I got to give Sid a shout out for that.
And Eric, what do you think?
I think, you know, this is actually the first time I've never written anything down for like kind of homework. I listened to it earlier. It's an album like you, Blake. This is the Overkill album I have listened to the most. So I just wanted to kind of absorb it. And this is one of those songs, as I was listening to it, I kind of made notes. I was like, from a guitar perspective, like, I feel like the writing is so strong. There's some really cool single notes like that. It's almost like a kind of a neoclassical vibe. But then Dee Dee's playing it too. So you have like the guitar and the bass. So it gets like really musical, but it still just like punches you in the mouth too, which, I mean, that's true Overkill style, you know. I love how they mix it up. And yeah, Bobby sounds great as ever. And there's just a blistering solo. And yeah, I see what you're saying about the funk. Yeah, because Dee Dee kind of doodle-a-kid it. He has that slap in there. That's pretty nice. Really, really great tune.
Okay, then I think that was, if this was a record, I think that was the end of side one, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, you're the record guy out of the three of us. I think that's safe to say.
I didn't pull out my records to look at it, but I thought so, but maybe not, because this next song's a long one. So maybe this is the end of side one. Doesn't really matter, I guess. Talking about every song anyway. So, okay, we're going to talk about Playing with Spiders, which is just a little intro to the song, and Skull Crusher. And Eric, you're not going to say epic when you talk about this song, are you?
Well, you pegged me. You might as well, you know, flag me now. You know, I guess I'm going to the penalty box, but this is the, 10-minute juggernaut. And it starts off, this is kind of what I'm talking about. It starts off and you're like, okay, I hear some Sabbath influence, but it's like this kind of hyperactive, bluesy, fast intro. It's not really heavily distorted at first, you know, but 10 seconds in, it's Overkill. And then boom, they just slam you with that detuned Skull Crusher. I'm like, oh my God, the distortion sounds so great. The drums too. Talk about some highlight drums. I mean, this is something I'm sure that influenced some of the doom metal bands out there. You can hear some Sabbath influence, but it is still very much Overkill. You know, the way they choose their notes, you know, wisely, but it's still slow. And then, you know, you think, okay, it sounds like it's over. They kind of add some suspension there. And then, boom, they go into double time, and then they're just, like, flying. And, yeah, the double bass work is awesome in the drums. Solo section, you got some sweet bends in there. And then, boom, they kind of almost bring it full circle and slow it right back down again. This is one of my favorite songs on the album. But I never thought of it, but I would say it's one of my favorite Overkill songs, to be honest.
And James, what do you think of Skull Crusher?
Yeah, to piggyback on what Eric was saying, I mean, this is the centerpiece of the album. It literally falls at the halfway point. There's four songs before it and four songs after it. So it really is the centerpiece. And, 10 minutes and 15 seconds. It's epic in length, I guess I'll say it that way. But yeah, I'm glad we talked about the production just a little bit earlier. I believe it was Terry Date that did the production for this album, which he would go on to work with Pantera in the couple of years after this album. And from what I have heard over the years, his guitar tone, or the guitar tone that Date was able to bring forth on this album, was one reason why Pantera wanted him so badly to come in when they were getting ready to put out Cowboys from Hell.
Cowboys.
Yeah. Just a tremendous, tremendous song. Like you were saying, it's got kind of this, I think it's just shy of 1 minute, this little melodic intro, but it's frenetic. And, it sounds to me, now I'm not a musician by any stretch of the imagination, that's Eric's expertise, but it sounds like both Bobby G and Dee Dee Verney are just working the necks of their instruments in that time. And then when that little intro comes to a halt, and then you just have this doomy, plodding riff that kicks in, I mean, it's just incredible. And I know when we talk about headbanging, especially in thrash, you think about breakneck speed. But I would challenge anyone to listen to this song and not be kind of nodding your head. Now, you might be banging your head a little bit more slowly, but it's impossible to sit there and not nod your head along with this ominous, just plodding riff. And then, as you talked about, when it sort of approaches the halfway point, you do get the tempo picking up quite a bit. It definitely has a thrashy section for a few minutes straight. And then, you know, slows back down again as we get toward the last couple of minutes. So it's just a brilliantly crafted song, in my opinion.
And I don't really need to say anything else. A dude had it wrote down here in case nobody else mentioned it. But of course, we already covered that it has some Sabbath sound to it and the doom metal thing. And then, James, you mentioned Pantera. And I did read that this album really influenced Pantera to go from glam metal to what they became for Cowboys from Hell and out beyond that. So, and the producer probably helped too, that they took or whatever, not took, but God, that did this album too. So yeah. But yeah, it is a great song. And yes, definitely probably did influence some doom as well, as Eric said there. Now, returning to Breakneck Speed, we go to Birth of Tension. James, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, that's actually the first note I wrote down for this song was we're back to the thrash here. You've got a nice heavy buildup that gives way to this just furious double bass drumming from Sid. I mean, I've got to give Mr. Falk another shout out here. The song kicks into full throttle, and Blitz is doing sort of this half shout, half clean vocal style, and he's a very versatile vocalist. It might not sound like that at first if someone's not as familiar with the catalog, but he really has just a range of different vocal styles he can employ. And as thrashy as this song is, it still does have an element of groove in it as well. I think we see that in a lot of songs throughout this album. It does slow down a little bit, kind of again, sort of as it gets round about the halfway point, give or take. But then it jumps back into full-on beast mode as we get into the guitar solo. So I think Overkill never necessarily got enough credit for how well-rounded their songwriting is, because it's not easy to incorporate a little bit of groove, a little bit of heavy, a little bit of kind of a doomy sort of atmosphere. And they know how to work it in sometimes in the span of one song. So that Birth of Tension is absolutely tremendous to me.
And Eric, what do you think?
So I'm going to have to break out the P word here. Like, you listen to this album, there are some really cool, like, single note riffing on here. And it's not progressive in the way that, like, you would think of, like, somebody like Rush or Queenstrike or, yes, somebody like that, or even maybe somebody newer. But, like, the approach, it could be so easy. Like, as a thrash band, you could just be playing power chords the whole time, right? And the bass could just follow it. But not Overkill. Overkill's going to, they're going to do what they want to do, and it's going to sound damn good, and you're going to enjoy the ride. And there are some awesome single note, some great single note riffing in there. And then boom, they hit you again with those stops. And man, the band is so tight. I feel like Metallica and to some degree Megadeth, they would get some of those nice chokes where they like smash the cymbal and hold it, the guitar and bass stop. But I feel like Overkill honestly mastered it on this album. I can't think of anybody else. Like I never really veered into the death metal genre, so I can't speak on death too much. But I feel like, especially for this era, like, you know, late 80s, this album just, it really features a lot of cool, like, accents and rests. And it's a complete song. I mean, Bobby sounds amazing. I think James is really spot on. Like, Bobby just, he shows a pretty wide range of what he can do just in this song alone. But the band is just firing on all cylinders. I forgot how much I like this song, to be honest with you. I listened to it this morning. I was like, this is a standout track. It's not just a good song. It's an amazing song.
And I was going to actually mention on the last song, but I forgot, but you mentioned it on this one, that there is some progressive elements too in the band, where it isn't, even though that song is, you know, a thrash song, but there's still, you know, when they have breakdowns, maybe not in that song, but in a couple of the other ones, but they just have a progressive kind of feel to them a little bit, but not, you know, not like the bands that you mentioned or a Dream Theater or anything, but you know, they have those moments and the doom moments, and then of course the thrash moments are all over the place. But anyway, yeah. So that was a good, and then we get, as speaking of, I guess, maybe progressive a little bit, I guess this one is a little bit like that. Who tends the fire? Where did I start? Eric, yes, who tends the fire?
Yes, this is a really cool song. This is one where, like, the drums, like, it kind of has that fade in there. But, like, honestly, the first time, and don't ask me how I remember, but the first time I heard this song, or maybe the first few listens, I was still like, wow, this is a pretty heavy riff. But I was like, he's singing over this, like, with his clean vocals. And I was like, I feel like it's like, risk-taking. I feel like other vocalists would have done kind of more of just a lower registry or maybe a growl or something. And Bobby's doing his thing. And there's definitely some nice melodic moments. I guess nice sounds funny with Overkill, but there are some like melodic moments, which is good to kind of mix it up. Because if it's always like at the same level, same tempo, I don't know about you guys, but I'd be pretty bored after probably two songs. And yeah, they mix it up really well in the song. And this is one that it has some melody, but it does have some tension in there as well. They really balance it out well. There's some excellent lead guitar work too.
And James, what do you think?
Yeah, this one, that was my first note for this one. We have another doomy song here. And the thing that really this entire album that's kind of characterizes it, I should say, is the fact that it is unmistakably a thrash album, but it absolutely has just an incredible variety of tempos. And so, and even more so toward the back half of the album is where we get some of the slower songs. But this is my favorite song on the album and my favorite doom-laden Overkill song in their entire catalog. It just barely nudging out Skull Crusher that we talked about just a little bit ago. Well, but even this one gets up over 8 minutes long. So it gives us a lot of bang for the buck. And the one comparison that I kept coming back to, speaking of doom, was that this song, when you listen to at least certain sections of it, I don't think would be out of place on an epic doom album, like say from a Candlemass. I'm a massive Candlemass fan. I don't do a ton of doom, but Candlemass is just one of my absolute favorite bands. And I was thinking, when you combine Blitz's more melodic vocals and his vocals in the chorus almost border on operatic at times, especially when he's going through and saying, I've watched the tides a turning, he kind of drags that word turning out and it almost gets operatic. And I thought, Blitz is doing his best Messiah Markle impression here from Candlemass. So I kept coming back to that comparison, but the intro on this song is very menacing. That's the word that came to mind. It's just brutal, yes, right from the start. And it kind of transports you, right? I mean, you start thinking, boy, I don't feel like I'm in the world of thrash at all, at least right now. But man, it just evokes this feeling of dread and doom as it builds up. Just a slow developing chorus, but one that I think if it had been done any other way, it wouldn't have been as good. I mean, that's how good they are. So we get a fast section in the song toward the end as well. So it doesn't stay slow the entire time. But yeah, it just does a great job of varying everything up. Like we've talked about variety quite a bit already. They show it in this one song yet again, just a well-written and superbly executed song. My favorite one on the album.
And yeah, that was 8 minutes. And then the next one is also almost 8 minutes. Anyway, so they have a lot of long songs, actually, looking back at this album. But the title track, The Years of Decay, at 7 minutes and 58 seconds. I guess we want to be exact here. James, what do you think of the title track here?
Yeah, this one, so like you were mentioning, we get some long songs here. This is another one. So it's 9 tracks long, this album, but it's like 56 minutes in runtime. So we get quite a bit of length here. This one, and Blake, I've heard you say this on some other episodes, I'm with you. I'm not much of a ballad guy. this one, I guess, I would call it more of a partial ballad because, we do get Blitz sort of crooning over some acoustic guitar playing as we get the song started. But the lyrics on this one, I know I've said I'm not much of a lyric guy, but I know this is the second time I'll talk about lyrics already, but the lyrics are notably deep on this one. You can hear a very contemplative aspect to the lyrics, just sort of contemplating the ravages of time and how it catches up with everybody eventually, and how, you know, just being out on the road like they were just constantly, I'm sure really they still are even now, and just really just a reflective song. So I really appreciate that in a thrash song every now and then. So, you know, with it being a partial ballad, I can deal with the softer first part of the song, but it does kick into a little bit more of a thrashy section, although it's certainly not to the point of breakneck speed. But I just think it's a very, very strong song, and I really like it.
And Eric, what do you think of the title track?
This is one of those songs that's funny. I came across the tablature, a buddy of mine that I played in a band with many years ago, or, you know, it was one of those things where it wasn't really a band, but we like jammed, and he had tabbed out the guitar work. And it's funny, I was looking at it. It's been a little while now, but it's one of those songs that starts off with this E minor add 9 chord. And it's like, okay, well, that's Sanitarium. That's watch, you know, Metallica. That's Watch the Children Pray, Metal Church. I'm like, it's just one of those in vogue, you know, thrash metal, like ballad, you know, chords. But I like the direction they go with it. I feel like they put their own twist on it. It's somber. It is slower. But I think they do a really good job with it. And, you know, it takes a little time to pick up. There's some really, really nice use of dynamics with some of these volume swells from the guitar. And then you hear like a distorted guitar that kind of semi-distorted guitar that follows the arpeggios on the acoustic guitar. And now all the non-guitarists that are listening to the podcast are like, all right, Eric, that's enough. But yeah, there's actually a lot going on here. And then, you know what, myself, like most metalheads, when the song really kicks in with that kind of like, it's almost like kind of a gallop there at the end, the years of decay, and they got those gang vocals going, and I'm like, wow, this has kind of turned into a whole new song here. But and just those nice thick saturated heavy chords, the power chords, sounds great. And then Blitzer's, you know, Blitz is doing some of those high notes, and he's shrieking, and it's like, this is the overkill that we know and love, you know. So they managed to really cover the gamut in this song. But it is one of their more musical songs, I think, across their 20 albums. It's definitely one of their most like kind of musical. It is a bit of a ballad, but they make it work. You know, I like some ballads. I don't really seek out ballads, as I mentioned on our Dream Theater podcast a little while back, but it's one that I like. And, you know, it finishes up. It kind of punctuates at the end. The fade out's pretty brilliant actually too. You know, it leads us into something special we're going to talk about very soon.
I never had a problem with the song or anything, or any like overkill. I don't know how, like, because I didn't go back and listen to every one of the 20 albums to get ready. I kind of listened to pieces to try to make the list up that we're going to do soon. But I never had any problem with any, like, because it's not the ballads I always had a problem with were the ones that were for the girls. I don't find that this, like, it's still evil and stuff in there. It's just, but yeah, it's a good song and I like it. And the next song is my favorite on the album, Evil Never Dies. And I'll let Eric talk about that, because I think you have something to say about this one.
So, yeah, this one, End, you know, that's widely what it's known as, Evil Never Dies. This one just starts off. It just, you know, with those accents, man, it is, you know, I've never thought of it before, and I do kind of hate to compare other artists, but I feel like it has maybe a little bit of the, like, well, I'm trying to think of which album came first, but, like, you know how Dyer's Eve has those pretty aggressive accents in the beginning? I see a little bit of a parallel. They certainly, nobody ripped off each other. I appreciate both. I think it's pretty awesome, actually. It kind of gets me pumped up, but I love how it starts off. And then it goes into this, like, just rapid fire, just these 16th note, you know, gallops in there. It's so intense. I don't want to repeat myself, but man, it's so aggressive. I actually recommend it to a guitar student of mine today. He was actually going to the gym, and it just so happened we were talking about it. I said, hey, I'm preparing for Overkill podcast. There are too many albums and too many songs to recommend, but he likes a lot of like death metal and some black metal, some classic metal I've gotten him into. But I was like, just go with Evil Never Dies. I sent it to him. I said, this is the perfect song for the gym. And the lyrics are cool. Blitzer's hitting some crazy high notes. And the band is just, oh my God, I swear the band is, I don't know. You know, I don't think a tank is fast enough, but I can picture something from, still not modern warfare, but something from maybe World War II, where just somebody just coming down like rough terrain. Over in Europe somewhere, and just soldiers are being taken out. And this song it's just so fitting. It's a titan of a song, and I never tire of this song. This is one of my favorite Overkill songs, without a doubt. It's a great song. It would be really hard for me. It's interesting, Blake. Good choice. I think we lost you briefly, but it's a good choice for a favorite song off this album. I like this album so much, which we'll find out soon. If you all couldn't tell, but this is definitely one of my favorite Overkill songs. I love it because it's just stripped down, and it's absolutely just uber aggression is what I'm going to call it. It's a great song. And you know what? If you somehow forget, I was listening and I was exercising earlier, and I was listening on Spotify, and then it ends. It's like, I swear, like they cut the tape, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then then Spotify just chose another Overkill song to go into. And I was like, okay, nice. Yeah. Great, great, great closing track, man. It's always important. If you want to make a statement, I think with any type of music, but with metal in particular, you better have a strong opening track to pull in the listener, but then make sure they don't fall asleep at the end. Don't make them bored. I think I'm going to cut this off. Nope. Not with this album. Nope, you might want to hit this one on repeat, which I pretty much never do, but this song is worthy of it.
And James, do you like this song?
Yeah, just a tremendous way to end the album. And I like the way that they put a period after the first letter in each word of the title so that it highlights that the acronym spells end. And it really is a great song. It was a little bit of an interesting introduction to it. The notes seem to kind of just echo out for a little bit more than a minute as the song is building up. But it then gives way to just an all-out thrash attack. Just more incredible guitar work from Bobby G, which all I know how to do is talk about it in layman's terms. Because, as I said, I'm not a musician. But I think it's also very well placed on the album. Like Eric, he nailed it. I mean, you've got to draw the listener in, but you also want to leave the listener wanting more for the next album. And this song right here is it's also well placed because we talked about how this album does contain several slower songs, and they all tend to be in the back half of the album, right? So we have Skull Crusher right at the halfway point, but then Who Tends the Fire and the title track. All three of those tracks occur within the last five. So I think if it hadn't ended on an absolute scorcher, it might have been a little bit of mishandling of the song order on the album, just having all of the slower ones on the back half and ending on a slow note. So I do think it was a very, very good and wise move after some of the slower, doomier songs to really end this one with an absolute scorcher. So love the song and great choice to end with it, I think.
Okay, now this song was actually this is actually supposed to be the song Overkill 4. I don't know if you know this story or not, but on their first three studio albums, they had a song Overkill 1, Overkill 2, mm-hmm. Overkill 3. Yeah. And this was Overkill 4, but they didn't name it Overkill 4. I don't know why. So I don't know why they went with Evil Never Dies. And then, because then on their album, where'd my list go? their 2007 album, Immortalis, if that's how you say it, they had Overkill 5 on there. So there was no Overkill 4 because this was it. But for some reason, they didn't call it Overkill 4. And I guess if people don't know that, they're going to be going, well, where's Overkill 4? Well, this is it, I guess. But I don't really know exactly why they did that, but anyway, and I don't know
Blake
why
just helped out the listener.
And speaking of that, I look on Spotify, that album Immortalis isn't on Spotify. All the other ones are, but that one isn't. I don't know why.
That's it's odd. Weird. That's odd. Yeah.
Because I didn't get to listen to that. I don't know if it's going to be in either of yours top tens, but it's not in mine because I didn't have time to go look it up somewhere else because, yeah, it's just, it's not on Spotify for some reason. But anyway, okay, so that was the album. Yeah, that's my favorite song because, you know, it's, you know, it's like you mentioned, Eric, about finishing off the album with a good song. It's like your Damage Incorporated by Metallica.
There you go.
Whatever, like that. And this, you know, it's your classic metal song, the slow start, and then bam, you're into it. Okay, so Toad, yeah, that's the album. So we're going to rate it, I guess. We'll let our guest, we'll let our guest, James, if you were a writer, what would you give this album out of 10?
Yeah, I have to say, this is a pretty flawless album to me. I mean, if I am still finding myself liking a song that's a partial ballad, that speaks to how strong the album is. this is a 10 out of 10 for me. I think just when you consider all of the different aspects of it, it was the swan song, unfortunately, for Mr. Gustafson, but as far as his time in Overkill. But just from front to back, you've got scorchers, you've got doomy songs, you've got the heaviness, you've got the contemplative, reflective lyrics. You've got incredible drumming, just incredible guitar work. Blitz employs just an entire range of vocal styles. The album really has everything, and there's not a weak song. Very few moments that I would even say are weak on this one, but keeps the listener engaged. That's one thing I always look at is replayability for an album. How good is it? Do you want to listen to it more than once, or is it one of those that you listen through once and can't hardly remember what you heard by the time you get to the end and don't necessarily have much of a desire to go back? For this album, I can play it all the time. I'd never find myself tiring of it. So yeah, it's a 10 in my book.
And Eric, what would you give it at a 10?
So I've said something to this effect on one of our previous podcasts, but I feel like, and I'm stretching it maybe a few, but I feel like there are about, you know, 12 to 14, maybe 14 to 16 perfect albums. You know, everybody's different. That's the beauty of music, right? So this is one of those perfect albums for me. If anybody listened to our top, you know, our top 10 thrash albums, which Blake and I had an absolute blast doing, this was on my top 10 thrash metal albums, and it's a gem, man. It's just the variety, you know, you guys have both hit it on the head. There's variety, there's the venom and intensity, there's like the tempos are all over the map, which really kind of lends it a little bit proggy. Just the creativity is awesome. And James, you definitely sounded like a musician. Like the way that Overkill constructs songs, though, you can tell they know what they're doing. They're well thought out. And again, the beauty of it is they're not compromising, man. They're these, as Bobby would say, man, they're just these guys from Jersey. They don't give a bleep, and they're going to do what they want to do. And this album from beginning to end is flawless. It's a perfect 10. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of another like Overkill album. Like I don't want to give away my top 10, obviously, like my number two, but I've listened to this album, you know, substantially more than all the other Overkill albums.
Yeah, I would give it a 10 too. Just, I mean, especially because, like I said before, it's the Overkill album I think I've listened to the most going back to that time and stuff. And yeah, so we're all going to give it 10s, which is fine. Now, I was going to mention one thing here. Eric, you mentioned off episode about Loudwire. Well, yes. It was ranked 5th on Loudwire's top 10 list of thrash albums not released by the Big Four.
Okay.
I don't know if they did a list with the Big Four or not, but
it's respectable.
Yeah. And I guess in Revolver magazine in 2014, it was on its list of 14 thrash albums you need to own. Whatever. I just noticed that. Yeah. So they mentioned. Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, has like anybody, that. Let's see, talk about seeing them live. I've never seen them live. as I can remember. Anyway, James, you want to go first? You've seen them live once. You want to talk about it at all?
Yeah. So I saw them 3 years ago this month. It was in February of 2022 in the North Carolina mountains, a town called Asheville. So it's about a 5 hour drive west for us from where my wife and I are. So she very graciously came along for the ride. And so we got the tickets and drove out there, stayed in a hotel the night of. So we drove up the day of the concert during the day. So I went to the show they were playing at that time with an opening band called Cultus Black that I wasn't super familiar with. But then after them, Prong also played right before Overkill. So that was pretty cool. I got to meet the guys in Prong after the show, actually. So that was really cool. But yeah, I saw them that night, and then we crashed in the mountains that night and came home the next day. But it was just a tremendous show. It's a little bit of a smaller venue. I got there early enough. I was all the way up standing against the barricade. So I was about 7 or 8 feet from Blitz. I was sweat catching distance, which was really cool. And one thing I noticed that Blitz does is when there's a section of the song where there's going to be a little bit of break from vocals, he will literally walk off the stage behind the curtain and let the other band members shine for a little bit. I think a lot of times the focus can be on the vocalist or front man, depending on if it's someone who doubles up. But he will actually walk behind the curtain and let those guys go, especially during solos. And of course, nowadays the guitar duo is Dave Linsk and Derek Taylor. And he lets those guys just shred. Dee Dee is up there pounding away on the bass. And then Blitz will come running back from behind the curtain and grab the microphone right as the vocals are set to start again. So I just think it's really cool that even as a front man, he's such a humble and down to earth guy. If you've heard him in interviews and stuff. And it was just a really great show. He interacted with the crowd and really a special, special memory. We're just audio, but I'm actually wearing the shirt that I got while I was at the show that night as we record this. So, yeah, tremendous. Just a lifetime memory there for me.
Nice.
Cool. And Eric, have you seen them or do you remember?
I have. That's the funny thing is I was jogging the memory banks. I was trying to really think if I'd seen them at any of the large venues back in the day. And I didn't see them on like a big stage. I saw them at a place. It's no longer around. I missed the place, but it was called Jack's in Springfield, Virginia. And I saw them there in the 90s and I saw them in the 2000s. And it's funny because what James said about Bobby, I mean, he would fly around. He was like all over the place, but he would give like the musicians time. He'd step back, let those guys do their solo section or breakdown. Then he'd come back. That was cool. And I remember like the 2000s show a little bit better than the 90s, but yeah, the band, like both times, like their energy levels, like off the charts, but it's really positive too. I mean, they had a pit going, but he's like reaching out, getting, you know, giving people like high fives. I mean, he's just like really involved. I mean, he definitely seems like a super humble guy. I mean, like James said, he just seems like a really cool, down to earth. Hey, I'm one of you. I just happen to be on stage and I got this crazy voice and range. And yeah, I mean, the band's, two times that I saw them, man, they delivered big time. They sounded great. They headlined both shows that I saw. Again, it's a smaller venue. Max capacity is like 500. But they delivered in a big way. I was really, really happy to catch them a couple times live.
Okay, great. Now, yeah, I don't know why I never saw them live, like I said, because they never were really headliners. I mean, I guess they might headline the small places, but back in the 80s there, I didn't see any small shows. I was mostly at the bigger shows, and they just didn't, I guess, open for any of the bands that I saw, at least that I can remember. Like, maybe I did see them once, but as far as I remember, I never saw them play live. But anyway, okay, so now we're going to go to our top 10 list, and we're already at like an hour, I think, here, so we don't need to really... we can... You don't need to say a lot about the albums and why you picked them, but you can say some stuff if you want, something that's important to say. But we're just kind of going through our list. So I'm going to let James go first, and we're going to start at 10 and go to your number one Overkill album. So go ahead.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, my list is going to look a little bit different than most probably, because as I mentioned, I wasn't around for the heyday. So by the time I discovered them, it was on their 16th album. So I kind of had the whole catalog to dive into. So I really don't have a deep nostalgic connection to the classic albums. I'm just kind of evaluating the songs as I like them. So there are going to be some that are a little lower than most, but hopefully it'll be a unique ride. So coming in at my number 10 is going to be the debut Feel the Fire from 85. The band actually formed like 5 years earlier initially, but the debut didn't get out till 85, but just a killer song or killer album. I'm sorry, all the way through, you know, think Blood and Iron, Kill at Command, Hammerhead. You could go on down the list. Production isn't great, but there is some kind of unique quality about the rawness of it. So love that one. My number 9 is going to be straight to the newest one, Scorched, from 2023. From the opening melodic notes of the title track that kicks the album off, all the way down to, like I mentioned earlier, The Surgeon and Twist of the Wick. Those are some faster songs. Harder They Fall is a fast one. Know Her Name is probably my favorite one on that album. Just the drumming from Jason Bittner is tremendous. So that's my number 9. Coming in at number 8, I'm going to their 2014 release, White Devil Armory. And that one was kind of on the heels of their thrash resurgence, right? So if you go back to Ironbound in 2010, I think is really where you see them move away.
Love that album.
Oh, it's a great one, brother. They really move away from some of the groove experimentation that they had done really for about 9 albums dating back to I Hear Black from 93. But, you know, it kind of heralded the return to thrash. And so you had this triple threat with Ironbound, The Electric Age, and White Devil Armory. So lots of great songs. Probably Pig and Bitter Pill would be my two favorites on it. They're one after the other in the track listing, tracks 4 and 5. So really, really great album there. Coming in at, I'm on number 7, right? Number 7 is going to be their 2019 album, The Wings of War. This is just a tremendous album. I mean, the opening song, Last Man Standing, is worth the price of admission alone. I mean, that is just a relentless song. It never, ever lets up. The aforementioned, or we were talking about this, I guess, before the recording, but Batshit Crazy is another great song. Head of a Pin is fantastic. And then they have one on there called Where Few Dare to Walk, I think is a really cool song. And then, of course, the punky number that they're known for, a song called Welcome to the Garden State, where you get a little quote from the Sopranos series right before the song kicks off. So really, really cool, cool album there. Number 6 for me is going to be their 2017 release, The Grinding Wheel. And this album is pretty unique because it comes after that triple-headed monster I was just talking about. And this album is a little bit more, it's got some progressive elements. You get more of the longer songs. I mean, some people were complaining, I saw when it came out, that it's a little bit bloated. A lot of, there's a 7.5-minute song to kick it off, and you've got some 6-minute songs in there as well. I think it is absolutely fantastic. And the new wave of British heavy metal influence on that album, I think you can hear Iron Maiden all over a song called The Long Road. Oh man. I mean, that's Iron Maiden through and through when you get the melodic vocals and it's just an incredible album from start to finish, in my opinion. So that's coming in at number 6 for me. My number 5, we're heading back to the classic era, which I define as those first 5 albums. And number 5 for me is going to be Horoscope from 1991. Of course, the first album after Gustafsson left, or, you know, was fired. I'm not sure either, Blake, what exactly happened there. But I think it's telling what a great guitarist Gustafsson was, though, because notice they replaced him with 2 guitarists. And they have been a 5-piece ever since then. So just shows you what big shoes Bobby Gustafsson's were to fill. But Horoscope is just fantastic. You know, it could have gone either way, right? Bobby's gone. You bring in 2 new guitarists. Which way is this going to go? And they put out an absolute thrash classic. I mean, from Coma all the way through to the final track, I think it's called Solitude. Just really, really an incredible album. Nice Day for a Funeral is a great, great song. The title track to that one is one of those slow, plodding, kind of just heavy, bang your head type of groovy songs. Just love that album through and through. Number four for me is going to be the album we just talked about here tonight, and that is The Years of Decay from 89. And don't have to go into too much detail because we just talked about it, but an all-time great in my view, and a good send-off if Bobby Gustafson had to leave. it was a great one to leave off on. My number three, going all the way back to album number two, which is Taking Over from 1987. As great as the debut was, I think the leap from Feel the Fire to Taking Over, just in terms of songwriting, is night and day. You really just all the way through, they're thrashy all the way through Deny the Cross and the second song, Wrecking Crew, which is my favorite song on the album. Those are two.
We are the Wrecking Crew.
That's it. Yes, sir. Wrecking next, right? I mean, those two songs, what a 1-2 punch to kick it off. But then you have Fear His Name, which slows the tempo down just a little bit. But really, Use Your Head, Fatal of Swallowed. You've got Power Surge, Electro Violence, kind of the anthem in Union We Stand, right? I mean, you really just, you don't have a weak moment, literally, on the entire album. Production is a step up from the debut as well. That always helps. I'm big on production. I like to have a little bit of bite to the sound. Not that I can't appreciate the classics, though. But Taking Over, yeah, it comes in firmly at number three. And my top two are both going to be more from that modern era that I was talking about. So my number two is Ironbound from 2010. What a resurgence. When you listen to Immortalis from 2007 that came out, the album right before it, and then you listen to Ironbound, you wonder what happened in those 3 years for these guys, because they were just full on back to thrash. You get the 8-plus minute epic, The Green and Black, to open the album. Just an incredible song. Starts with the build-up, so you get the anticipation, and then it really kicks into high gear. The title track is incredible. My favorite song is Bring Me the Night, just a song that does not let up. I mean, the speed is just blazing. But other songs like Give a Little and Endless War and In Vain, just some really great tracks on that one. And what a thrash renaissance for these guys. They had some thrashy moments in that middle period, but I think they really got back to it here, kind of throwing back to those classic first five albums. And then my number one, which would probably not be number one for almost any Overkill fan, definitely not the ones who were around for the heyday in the 80s, but my number one is the 2012 release, The Electric Age. A lot of that probably comes down to the fact that that was the first Overkill album I ever heard, so I guess there is a little bit of nostalgia for that. Heard that one the year it came out, so 13 years ago now. But as we talked about kind of before the recording, when you get Come and Get It and then Electric Rattlesnake, that 1-2 punch kicking it off, you get a little bit of a slower, groovier song in Black Days, but then you also have my favorite song on the album and my favorite Overkill song period, which is Drop the Hammer Down. Almost six and a half minutes of just pure speed, but I just think the songwriting is impeccable. The production is crystal clear. For it to be my favorite album, even though it's the 16th album in the catalog, just shows you how strong these guys have stayed really throughout their career. So, that's my list, but you can't go wrong with any of them, really.
That's right. Good list. And Eric, let's hear your top 10 list.
Well, I was afraid that we were going to have to do a top 10 Overkill albums, and having, I guess, about one day to piece them all together was very difficult. I do listen to some Overkill. Some of these albums I haven't heard in a really long time, so it was not an easy chore. I mean, I feel pretty good about my top three, top five, but I feel like they have so many great albums. You know, I kind of put the list together. I don't think I ever thought it, you know, for a change. So I start off with one that I believe you like quite a bit, and I was initially critical of because there's a lack of guitar solos. But this album has some of the best heavy rhythm guitar tones out of all Overkill albums. Number 10, From the Underground and Below. Oh my gosh, there's just some menacing, brutal, heavy riffing on there. And I dusted that one off at the gym about a month and a half ago. I was like, you know what? I actually like this album more than I gave it credit for quite a while back. You know, you got some Long Time Dying. You know, Half Past Dead, it's a pretty strong album. You know, number nine, I probably won't talk too much about these albums, which is a change of pace for me. But number nine for me, this is one that I was telling Blake, and not to give another website a little bit of props, but yeah, for whatever reason, Loudwire kind of hated on Relics. I like it a lot. It's one that I listened to quite a bit in the earlier, I guess, early mid-2000s. I like it. I feel like they mix up the thrash and the grooves really well on this album. I feel like this might be a little low for the next one. I kind of want to change it, but I won't. But the opening two tracks for Ironbound, number eight, it could certainly be higher, but I just love the tightness of it. And yeah, I mean, 8 minutes out, it has kind of some progressive elements there with the tempo changes and there's a lot going on. And then the song Ironbound is killer, but I love the whole album. I feel like if you had asked me a decade ago, Horoscope would be higher. And maybe it could be. I listened to it not too long ago. For whatever reason, man, maybe it was like the mood I was in. I think it's a fantastic album. I feel like it's could be a top three for a lot of people. For whatever reason, Coma is like one of my favorite songs by them. Like, you know, Horoscope, Blood Money. I thought it took a lot of balls to cover Frankenstein. You got to have some skill to pull off a song like that, you know. But that was number seven for me. Killbox 13 is number six. This one might be the most balanced as far as your thrash and your groove. I had a mix. You know what? Honestly, for our listeners, let me see if I can cue it up for you guys. I was going to say for the old listeners, I put together a pretty interesting mix. So I got Relics, Necroshine, Killbox 13, and Bloodletting, and I was spinning that today. Because those are albums, I feel like they're just about interchangeable in a good way. And Killbox, like everything that was pumping up there was just, it was churning through, Unholy, you know, Sound of Dying, Damned. I mean, there's some great riffing going on there. After that one, Bloodletting, which is one like at my old gym. No, I'm definitely not a bodybuilder. I'm a pretty short, skinny dude, but I listened to Bloodletting at my old gym probably more than any other album. And, Thunderhead, opener aside, and it is one of their top openers, in my opinion. I just love that kind of vibrato, which is kind of, it builds. It's like a slow build. And then, oh my God, the drums and the guitars, they just burn you, man, like right across the face. Man, it's like, wow, what just happened? I Hurricane, Blitzer has never sounded better. Oh my goodness. That's a great song. Can't Kill a Dead Man. It's funny. I don't know how, but Death Comes Out to Play. Somehow I had it on shuffle earlier today. It played it twice and I was like, you know what? Actually, I wanted to hear it another time. So I don't know. The Spotify algorithm must be clairvoyant, but that's a mean song. It's got a pretty cool chorus to it as well. I feel like my number four kind of gets, I don't know, I want it left out. Sometimes it's almost gets teased, but Under the Influence, it's not their most consistent album, but for me, a little bit of it's kind of a sentimental thing. Like that's, you know, I had been into Overkill for a little while, but as I shared with Blake, me and some buddies of mine in high school would be like, hello from the gutter, you know? Hello from our little hell. And we'd be yelling that in the hallway. People, the other students, the teachers, man, what is wrong with these people? You know, are they on drugs or something? No, we're straight. We're fine. We're just metalheads pumped up about the album. So, you know, that video got some great airplay. Shred is such a killer opener. Never Say Never. You're going to talk about some attitude. And then one that kind of sneaks under the radar, unless you're like a really diehard, I feel like, Overkill fan, like End of the Line. That just has some great driving double bass, very melodic vocals, but it's got that edge, Overkill edge to it. So they really balance it out, you know, really, really strong album. Here's another one that I didn't pull up the list in front of me, but Necroshine on the Loudwire. It didn't get a whole lot of love on there as well. I'm trying to even think what song I would start with. Like, My December's great, and it has some really nice power chords and some quick stops in there. Revelation is really like hyper intense. I love the attitude. The songwriting's excellent. I Am Fear as well. Like, they have a couple of these, like, I call them aggro. You know, I don't know if that term's used much these days, but these aggro aggressive is just, it's just peeled back. It's very aggressive. Awesome. Just true, you know, thrash metal music. Dead Man has that, kind of has a little bit of sense of humor in there, which, you know, Overkill's going to give you from time to time. The title track's a gem as well. That's a great tune. Number two, I gotta go way back. We're gonna go back to some In Union We Stand, Taking Over. Yes, James covered pretty much all the songs on the album, so I don't need to say too much. But the production is better, and I have to agree with you with the songwriting. Nothing about Feel the Fire. I wanted to have Feel the Fire as like an honorable mention. I decided to skip the honorable mentions this one time. But Feel the Fire, you have to start somewhere. But there is quite a leap that, like James had said, from the songwriting perspective, from the first debut album to Taking Over. And Taking Over is just, it's just, I don't know. I almost feel like, I don't know how, you know, if you guys would agree with this or you'd be like, Eric, you're crazy. But I feel like with this album, it's almost like a greatest hits album. What do you guys say to something like that?
Of which, with the Taking Over?
Taking Over. Like, isn't it almost like, if you look at, like, you have Wrecking Crew, which is an anthem. You know, you got, like, In Union We Stand, Fatal If Swallowed. You know, Fear His Name's definitely a little bit slower, but, I mean, it's the album is almost like, it's so good, it's almost like a best of. That's, you know, It's just something that kind of struck me. I've never thought too long about the album, but It's a great album, and for the year that it came out, the production value is excellent. You know, I love the Electro Violence chorus, man. That's a killer song. Obviously, we talked about In Union We Stand, but that video and song really made an impact on me in my youth. So I gotta hit him with double horns on that. And number one, which won't come to a surprise to anybody that's been listening for 5 minutes of this podcast, Years of Decay, which is a masterclass in thrash execution. You've got aggression, you've got tempo changes, you've got doom. You know, there's just so much going on. Some nice melodies. You got some cool gang vocals. Man, it's just such a kick-ass album from beginning to end. I would say if somebody's like, for some reason, maybe they're younger or whatever, maybe they missed the boat on speed thrash metal, this is one of your top 3 to 5 albums you just need to pick up. Years of Decay, pick it up. If you dislike one song on there, email me, whatever. You can call me some names, but the whole album, the whole album is pure genius. What are your top 10, Blake?
Okay, I'm
curious.
I don't even have Taking Over on my list, by the
way. Oh my God, that hurts.
No, I don't. Maybe I haven't really listened, because, like I said, I think
it's probably a while.
This was the first one I heard, and so maybe I didn't really go back. I just went forward alive.
Yeah,
I'll have to re-listen to it and see.
Okay,
but I find the top five are kind of easy for me, but the next five, it's like
tough,
because all their albums are good. Like, they're not maybe all great, but they're all good, and so it's like, which one do I put here, which one do I put there, so whatever. So I kind of just did it quick today, just skipping through songs, thinking, oh yeah, I remember, because it has been a while since I listened to all these albums. I've probably listened Under the Influence, and one of my number one when I get to that. But anyway, here we go. Number 10 is White Devil Armory from 2014. Number 9, I'm not going to say much about, because you guys have kind of covered pretty much every album except maybe one on my list that I don't think was on either of yours. But so my number 9, Killbox 13 from 2003. My number 8 is Relics 4, right? Yeah, 2005. My number 7 is The Killing Kind. My number 6 is Ironbound. My number 5 is The Grinding Wheel. And the I will mention this. The main reason this one, which is The Grinding Wheel, sorry, I just forgot the name of the song for a second. But because I have a green car, and so the first song is Mean Green Killing Machine, so that's why. But yeah, I love that album. Okay, my number four, which I don't think either of you mentioned it, is WFO, I guess Wide Fucking Open is what that is called, but that's my number four, even though, again, it's been a while since I listened to that. My number three is Under the Influence. And you, Eric, you mentioned a bunch of the songs, but also like Head First on there. It has a little bass kind of intro thing on that song. And yes, Hello from the Gutter, which I, like I said earlier, I think was the first video ever seen, possibly song by Overkill. My number two is Years of Decay. And so Eric can guess my number one because it's From the Underground and Below. Because yes, I do, even though there is no guitar solos in it, but it's just heavy riff. And I think there's even a ballad on that one that I don't mind either. I just, I'm not gonna go back and look that up, but anyway. Yeah, so there we go. And I noticed James didn't have that album on his list, From the Underground and Below. I was wondering if he was gonna throw that in there, but it doesn't matter, of course, and because I didn't have the first two albums like you both did, didn't you? I think, or no, Eric, you didn't have, you had
I didn't have Feel the Fire, but yeah.
Because I don't think I really listened to those first two very much, but it would be a going back to listen to it again thing. But anyway, there we go. Overkill. We were due to do another Overkill album, I think, and I'm sure there's other albums we could do sometime. There's so many albums that...
But, unbelievable.
Yeah, but anyway, so it was a good choice, James. Thanks for coming on our podcast. We would love to have you on again sometime if you'd like to be a guest again sometime.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Blake. Yeah, it's been great to be here with you and Eric, and I would absolutely love to do this again. This has been a complete blast for me, so I appreciate you guys.
Okay, and thanks for being a fan and everything, and for contacting me, and for anybody that maybe skips over the first part of the podcast. Yes, you want to be a guest. Now, I can't have everybody that wants to be a guest isn't going to be a guest, but, you know, if you have a good album choice and whatever, you seem like a decent person, you could be on the podcast like James was. So thanks, James.
Great job, man.
For joining us. And thanks, Eric, again, as always.
You got it. Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for listening this week. And we will see you again next week. Goodbye.